Oh, I'm excited for this one.
Does it feel like Christmas morning to you, Michelle?
A little bit, little bit. I've been wanting to talk about this for a very long time. And then along came a movie.
Oh, boy.
That I am obsessed with. And we have someone else here with us to talk about it with us today. We have our good friend, Erin.
Yay.
Say hi.
Hey.
Hi. We actually wanted to have Erin on the podcast to talk about patriarchy anyway. And then Barbie came out.
And Michelle's head exploded.
Not just mine. So, hi, Erin.
Hi.
How are you today?
I am glorious.
Oh, wonderful.
Mostly glorious.
Mostly glorious.
Keep drinking.
I have my Mr. Pink bubbles.
That's right.
Yes. You'll get even more glorious.
Absolutely. Megan, how are you feeling?
Nervous. You have been super excited for this episode, and I've been dreading it, if I'm honest.
I know, but I would like, would you share with me why you've been dreading it?
I think you know why.
Well, I'm loud and ridiculous and passionate, yes, but like, do you think we're going to fight?
That's a good question.
Query.
I don't know about fighting. Maybe I was a little worried about that. I think we may not agree on everything.
Okay, that's fine. And that's why we started this podcast.
I just think that this is your shining moment of something that's really extremely super important to you, and yeah. I'm here to support it.
Oh, thanks.
And okay, well. I am nervous that it's going to be, like, really intense.
Shit, what'd you guys drag me into?
Sorry, Erin. Welcome.
Damn it.
You're actually here to moderate a cage fight.
Oh, I think I've said enough.
So I anticipated that might be why you were feeling nervous. I'm hoping that this might help kind of sort some of that out from the beginning, because often when we talk about these things, I feel like there comes in some devil's advocate stuff and some defense of particular people, you know, like not everyone is like this or whatever. So if we can establish a few definitions before we get too far into this, when we're talking about patriarchy, we're not talking about men, right?
Right.
We're talking about the definition of a social system in which positions of dominance and privilege are primarily held by men, right? And when we're talking about feminism, which inevitably will come up in a conversation about patriarchy, we are not talking about bra-burning, hippie liberal women who want to rule the world and think men are terrible. We're talking about a socio-political movement and ideology that aims to establish political, economic, personal, and social equality of the sexes / genders. It said sexes, I added genders. And then misogyny and the opposite of that, misandry, are the hatred of, contempt for, or prejudice against women and girls or men and boys. So I am hoping to have a systemic conversation, not man bashing, if that helps you feel any more settled in this at all.
All right. Thank you for setting the table.
Okay.
Erin, how do you feel about all this?
Oh,
are
goodness.
You excited to have this conversation?
Now you're worried?
No. I'm excited to be here. I'm super tired.
Cool.
So asterisk, if anything makes zero sense, I blame that.
No, we do that a lot, actually.
Yeah. But I took notes. So I am a lawyer and I take notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Donald Trump reference, if you ever
Oh, God.
He was mad about a lawyer taking notes. Speaking of systems.
What a waste to start.
No, but I appreciate the framing, partly because my job as a lawyer is to focus on systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I do not do representation of individuals. Maybe I would one day, but I have never engaged in that type of law. I've always been more focused on systemic issues and how you change, for example, laws, as Megan knows, the glory of Olympia.
Oh, yeah.
But how you change laws, because that is where systems are built and upheld. And
right.
So, yes, I appreciate the framing around systems, and I wrote it in big capital letters in my notes.
Yep, exactly. Because I think that we all can easily acknowledge that, I mean, we know each other really well. There are men in our lives that we know and love and respect and trust and don't think are terrible people, right? So I think that that holds for perhaps you too, listener, like, please don't hear any of this and think this is man bashing if we're bashing a system that benefits men more than women, right? And there are plenty of men to bash.
Totes.
Don't get us wrong. Also, we just had a little bash session about Lauren Boebert as well. So, listen, we are equal opportunity here.
Equal opportunity bashers.
That's right.
We will bash anyone, okay?
Only if they deserve it.
Yeah,
only
if they're assholes.
Yes. So, I feel like that's all the caveat I want to put out there. Anybody else?
Pass.
Great. Fair enough.
This is a game show.
Yeah.
Pass.
Yes. I'll take patriarchy for 400, Alex.
Erin. Any caveats from you?
I don't think so. As you were talking, Michelle, I was also thinking, like, individual men do come to mind for me. Because it's both and.
Yes.
But I think it's more productive to focus on the systems. And as you 100%. Mentioned, Lauren Boebert, I was also thinking how, when I prepared and read the many linked articles that Michelle said.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I got excited.
It was a lot. I like to get through it all. And some had paywalls, but that's okay. But there were also some women that came to mind.
Yeah.
And even moments of reflecting on myself and how I have been upholding elements of the system of patriarchy and have benefited from it.
Yeah.
And then, honestly, Lauren Boebert came to mind. So anyway, full circle.
And I think that you can't have conversations like these without talking about things like internalized misogyny, because it's an inherently connected part of all of this, because the system requires everyone within it to uphold it. Yeah. So let's start by talking about the movie.
Mm-hmm. How many times have you seen the movie Barbie?
Five.
And all in the theater, let's be clear, because it just came out streaming like this weekend.
Right. Actually, I believe it came out a week ago streaming. Oh. But yes, I've seen it five times. And
how many times have you streamed it?
None. I actually haven't bought it yet at home, but I will. Yeah. After the fifth time, I was like, okay, I can take a little break. I will admit that I'm a little obsessed, but I think it's a good one to be obsessed with, personally. And I don't know that I've ever seen a movie in the theater even twice, maybe in high school when Scream came out or Clueless or something. But like, I don't rewatch movies a ton. Yeah.
You didn't see Titanic in the movie theater in 1997 more than once.
I saw it one time in the theater.
Holy crap. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's really long.
It is.
For some reason, every time I'm in Mexico, the movie Titanic is on TV. And we always end up watching it because it's one of the only things that's on in English.
In English, yeah.
And they filmed part of it there.
Did they?
Yeah. When I was growing up in San Diego, there was call for extras. And it was because they were filming on the beaches of Baja and you could go down and be an extra because they were getting the sunset. This was my recollection from, again, the late 90s.
Did you go?
No, I was going to go. And then my mom was like, you're not going to Mexico, you dumbass 17-year-old.
Baja,
I was like, I could have been Leo's age-appropriate girlfriend. But it didn't happen. Oh, but anyway, maybe that's why, because part of it was filmed there. That's a stretch.
Pursued the law. It's almost as good as being Leo's girlfriend.
Right.
Almost. You're far too old for him now. Okay. Who wants to start with some thoughts about the movie?
Shit. You're not going to cry, though, right?
No.
Okay. I mean, I cry, but Michelle doesn't cry.
I cried at the movie.
Did you?
Yeah. All five times?
Christ.
No.
No, but I mean, like, all five times.
No, I didn't cry all five times. No, no.
Three out of five?
At least two.
Okay.
I will say one of the most fun things about times two through five was knowing what's coming and observing other people's reactions to everything. The second time I saw it was with you, Erin, and my mom and another friend and some of our kids. And I was sort of battling my 10-year-old son who was like, this is for girls. I don't want to be here. And I was like, that is some bullshit. You shut up right now. I didn't say that. I did, however, have a moment of like, if you fucking breathe wrong during America Ferrera's monologue, I'm going to not be okay. Because it's so impactful. But anyway, I didn't cry that time because I was really taken out of the whole thing by managing him a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was really fun to watch you and my mom and Mika and just gauge everybody else's reactions and see how it landed for other people. So anyway, let's start here. Who had Barbies as a kid?
I did.
Okay.
Pretty sure I had Weird Barbie.
I mean, if you don't, then you're weird. Yeah. If you didn't make Weird Barbie.
Yeah.
So yes. But my mom would not buy them for us.
Okay.
She did not think that they were appropriate. And that's a weird term, but she did not love the idea.
The messaging.
She didn't love the messaging.
Okay.
Which we'll maybe later. But yes. Like how I walked out of the movie thinking differently about that.
Yeah.
Just the messaging of the toy itself. Not really part of the messaging of the movie. But
yeah.
But no, she did not love the idea of giving us Barbies to play with. But my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, ooh, paternal, that's came in. Old school Irish Catholic New Yorker would get them for us. Mm-hmm. And my mom let us play with those.
Okay.
But we weren't really into them. And most of them turned into weird Barbies because we were like, what the fuck do you do with these? Yeah. They take off their clothes,
give them a haircut,
cut their hair,
make out with G.I. Joe totes. Or something.
Well, right? We didn't have those either, though, because that was war. So yeah. She was kind of not that.
Did you have a lot of neutral toys?
We had Free to Be, You and Me. Do you remember that? Marlo Thomas.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, wow. Y'all should re-listen. Well, find it. First of all, we had it on vinyl, which I feel like is a real shame that it somehow wasn't retained in the many moves later on in life. But Marlo Thomas, you know, 70s, 80s star. Mm-hmm. No idea actually what she did because it was just a name that my mom passed down to us. A record called Free to Be. Mm-hmm. And there was a song about free to be, yeah, you and me. Free to be, da, do, da, da.
Oh.
Every boy in this land grows to be his own man.
Oh, my
God. No?
No?
No, it's not. Okay.
I'm enjoying this.
I know. It's fun for me.
Now people are going to Google it. But there was a song on there. They're kind of like stories and songs on the record. But one is William Has a Doll.
Oh.
And it was all about a doll, William has a doll. And kids teasing William about having a doll and Marlo Thomas being like, back the fuck off. I mean, she would say that in the children's album.
Sure, sure.
But that was generally the message that you should be who you want to be. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't be defined by being, you know, what society says you should be. So between that being my mom's like approach, plus the no Barbies, plus the no G.I. Joes.
Yeah.
You know, you can see where we were coming from. Yeah. That.
So. You guys remember that episode of Friends where Ross's son Ben was carrying around a Barbie?
Yes.
And he was like mortified and trying to get him interested in G.I. Joe and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And the kid just kept wanting the Barbie.
Yeah. Let the boy play with what he wants.
Yeah.
I never had Barbies growing up. As an adult, and this seems silly to say now, as an adult, that was kind of a point of pride for me because I had this impression, basically like the character Sasha in the movie says when she like dresses Barbie down at the lunch table at middle school. This is a terrible representation of idealized beauty standards and blah, blah, blah. We can't all look like this tiny, waisted, blonde, big boobed model doll. And so this is bad for women.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get my kids Barbies at all until I saw a STEM Barbie with like a science lab come out. And I was like, okay. You can have this Barbie. This Barbie's fine. But that was one of the things. And that's like the first point they make in the fucking movie, right? Oh, by the way, spoiler, if you haven't seen it, we're going to
spoil the caveat of the beginning
thing for you.
Turn off the episode
right now.
If you haven't seen Barbie.
Yeah.
Michelle's like, but also there's probably no one that hasn't seen it.
There better not be.
Well, not your listeners. I mean, there's plenty of people who haven't seen it.
Well, that's true. Yeah, they're not listening to us. Anyway, really though, if you haven't seen it, you should probably turn this off and listen later. Yeah, one of the first points that they make in the movie is that Barbie was created out of a desire to show little girls that playing with dolls didn't just mean they could play at being mothers and like caretaking and housekeeping.
They could be pilots and they could be doctors.
Yeah. And of course, the first Barbie was none of those things.
Right.
But it grew quickly to include a lot of different professions. I had no idea that the creator, what's her name, Ruth Handler, that's what she was going for.
Right.
I didn't know that. I kind of felt like, well, fuck, I had this idea my whole life. And I was like proud of myself for never having a Barbie. And that's stupid. And I don't think that that take is totally wrong either, because it really was an unrealistic, unattainable beauty standard. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other ways that that manifests in our society.
Mm-hmm. But to be clear, there's not like a... not that we grew up with, a different sized Barbie who was also a pilot, right? I mean, visual of Barbie back then still was, you are a pilot, but don't forget that you're also this slender, tall,
perfect,
blonde, woman. Beautiful.
Yeah,
right.
You can have it all.
Right.
As long as you look like this.
Yeah. Yeah. But I still struggle with that a little bit, that like in the movie, the characters, the Barbies, did not look like what we grew up with. Rightfully so. They were like, we got to diversify.
Yeah.
But what we grew up with was still the, at least that I remember, again, the 7 that I got from my grandmother. I don't know. But it was still the visual aesthetic was the thing. And they also had this other thing that was a career. So what stuck out to me was the body.
So I have what Sasha, played by Ariana Greenblatt, says here. Side note, did you know that Sasha and her three friends were meant to be the Bratz dolls, like represent?
Oh, I did read that. Yes.
Isn't that funny?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You look at them side by side and you're like, oh yeah, they cast that specifically.
There's a lot of meta things. So only said, nerds like you have. Anyway.
Listen, I have gone deep down the rabbit holes.
You wouldn't know this unless you've seen it five times and read 722 articles about it.
I'm not ashamed.
I'm kidding. I love
it. No, I'm not ashamed at all. Okay. So she said, you've been making women feel bad about themselves since you were invented. You represent everything wrong with our culture, sexualized capitalism, unrealistic physical ideals. You set the feminist movement back 50 years. You destroy girls' innate sense of worth, and you are killing the planet with your glorification of rampant consumerism. And then she runs off crying.
Barbie does. Not Sasha.
Not Sasha.
Sasha holds her fucking ground.
Yeah. For sure.
It's like, take that, bitch.
That's right. That to me was like, oh yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Mm-hmm. But as Sasha learns more about her and what they actually were trying to do, and she's like, no, I genuinely thought we fucking fixed everything. But no.
No.
Okay. So talk to me about Barbie Land. Mm-hmm. Megan, I'm going to start with you. I want to know, before anyone leaves, mm-hmm. how do you feel about Barbie Land?
I mean, everyone was pretty happy and chill.
Everyone?
Well, all the Barbies were.
Ah.
I mean, I think the guys thought they were happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They thought that vying for the Barbies' attention all the time was what they should be doing and mm-hmm. wanted to do until they realized there were other options.
Yes.
I don't know how much you want to like.
I mean, we've already done the spoiler alert. So if you haven't seen it, it's your own fault for being here. Mm-hmm. Erin, what about you?
Same. I mean, it was bliss. First of all, let's talk about the set.
Oh, like, my God.
Step back from the message, but also the set was part of the message.
Well, like, and they built the entire fucking thing. It wasn't CGI. They actually made all of that.
But I wanted to live there. Even though I didn't grow up with Barbies, I was like, oh, my God, this is so magical. The streets, oh, and your friends are right next door.
Right.
And I mean, you know, I would have appreciated more maybe walls and things like that.
Yeah.
But actual water and actual food. But if you could, it was like Palm Springs.
Yes.
Yeah. It was just so colorful and beautiful. So like as soon as the movie started, and I doubt you were watching me watch the movie,
but I was like
beaming.
Yeah.
As soon as it came on screen, I was like, this is so magical and beautiful.
Well, that's what they want little girls to feel like when they get the Barbie dream house.
That's right.
And then you do start to dive in and you're like, oh, the Barbies are living it. You know, mm-hmm. What does she say? A bespoke party.
Yeah.
Choreographed dancing. And
yeah.
He's like, oh, cool. Right. They just go along with it. They're like, this is amazing. Uh-huh. And then you learn later on that they're like, oh, but I've never known anything else.
Right.
Which we'll talk later, I'm sure, but that's also the flip side of the other message.
Right.
If you've never known anything else, then that is your universe, and that is how you move through the world.
That is how you have been conditioned.
Exactly.
And the Kents were conditioned mm-hmm. in their own way, but in a really beautiful space.
Right.
So they're fine. You're fine.
And so a lot of the TikToks and Instagram reels and articles, whatever, all the shit that I've seen, the people that are upset about this movie. The Ben Shapiro's of the world,
if you will. I haven't known about him.
You know, and it's not just dickhole pundits that are having these reactions, but they're, of course, the ones with microphones. What I've heard from that side of things is this is a terrible representation of men. You make us seem so weak.
Hmm.
This is just feminist propaganda. Oh, they're grumpy. And blah, 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 right? And they're saying that because the men have no power in that space.
Well, they are also making a lot of fun of them, you know, and they're like Mojo Dojo Casa houses. And when he's like, I'll play my guitar at you and things like that. I mean,
have you not been at multiple parties in your life where some dude played a guitar at you?
I know what I'm saying. Like, they're taking all of the worst types of attributes like blowing it up and making it into this huge thing. And so it's like comical, right?
Because
it's so extreme. And what they're saying is, well, we're not all like this or whatever. And it's like, well, right. It's intentional. It's intentionally exaggerated. So,
and to get that worked up, knowing what you just said,
which
is, it is hyperbole. It is meant to be that way. And for you to get that worked up about something that is clearly over the top, seem a little sensitive about this. Like,
right.
To use a favorite word in that podcast thread, they're easily triggered.
Mm-hmm. Well, what they're yelling about is feminism.
Right.
But what they're actually mad at is being treated the way that women are very often and forever have been treated. When you are not the center of the story, when you are diminished to silly hyperbolic characteristics, when you are diminished to your looks. Oh, it doesn't feel good, Ben Shapiro?
Yeah.
You don't feel yourself represented in that? Mm. You think that's a poor representation of men?
One of my notes was that, first of all, one of the articles you sent talked about how in matrilineal or matriarchies, mm-hmm. like the difference being men aren't actually discriminated against in those societies.
Right.
It's like more about gender equality or shared power and leadership. Whereas in patriarchies, that's very much not the case, right? It is flipped. It's disproportionately represented. So if men are 50% of the population, they carry more than 50% of the leadership, whether it's corporate or government or whatever.
Yeah.
But in matrilineal societies, that's not the case, right?
Right.
There's not a disproportionate amount of power or leadership exerted in the way that there is in a patriarchy. So for the Bens of the world or whoever, the Piers is, how do you plural Piers Morgan's name?
Penis.
Dickhead.
Yeah.
But for them to have that disproportionate reaction mm-hmm. is like, I think it happened because it's so unfamiliar to
That's
them.
That's the thing.
They're disoriented by this, like, cannot compute the yeah. message that is coming because I have yeah. never heard it before.
Exactly.
It's like, welcome to the fucking world, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, and Ben's just a dick anyway.
I saw a TikTok by someone named Sad Panda. I would like to read this to you now. It was just like looking at her and with the Billie Eilish song playing in the background. And on the screen, it said, in Barbie Land, where everything is perfect for women, men still aren't suffering. They aren't mm-hmm. in servitude. They aren't being objectified or harassed. They are just not the main characters. But in a world run by and for men, women are never safe. That's the difference between feminists and misogynists. Women just want to be left alone mm-hmm. while men don't see us as humans. And you could argue that that is a bit hyperbolic, that last part. But the point holds, like, in Barbie Land, the Kens were just kind of fluff. They were just
existed.
There. They weren't being, they didn't even have jobs. Like, nobody was trying to make them take out the garbage. The ladies who were taking out the garbage were fucking happy to be doing it because they were contributing members of the society.
They weren't demeaned. They were living their best life. They got to fucking dance at the bespoke party.
You don't think the men were demeaned at all?
In the original Barbie Land, I think they just existed.
Okay.
Like, again, they were kind of like, we just exist. We just are happy. We get to go to the beach party.
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, do you think they were demeaned?
A little bit. Yeah, I do. They were depicted as if they weren't intelligent or capable enough of doing the things that the women were doing. And that's why the women had all the important jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like that was sort of an intentional jab, which was not unfair in my mind. I think they were demeaned a little. Yeah.
Okay. Like you said, I think it was intentional that they turned mm-hmm. it on its head.
Well, that's exactly what I thought they were trying to do. I did think they were demeaned, but I thought that they were trying to demean them the way that women are typically demeaned.
Right. Well, and like this Sad Panda said, they still aren't suffering. Mm-hmm. They're not in servitude.
Right.
They're not being objectified or harassed. Like, okay, so it's not perfect for them, but they're not in harm's way in the same way that women are. So
it's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable.
But like their safety wasn't threatened.
Right.
Like them walking through Barbie Land and being approached by one of the female construction workers or one of the sanitation workers, mm-hmm. like they weren't actually feeling unsafe. They just were like not the center.
Well, and to your point earlier, when women or people of any identifying gender orientation are exaggerated through any form of entertainment, whether it's a movie or a TV show or whatever, most people find that funny and they get the joke, you know, they get the exaggeration. In this case, just immediately jump on the defensive. Okay. You're not even trying to get it. You know,
you're missing the point so greatly.
Yeah. But,
The outrage, again, was like, wow, this has happened in so many other entertainment contexts over the top shit. And like this clearly struck a chord, but in a way that I was like, oh, you can't even just sit with it for a scotch mm-hmm. and realize that this has been happening to like virtually everybody else. This is just the first time it's happening to quote you
right
as a group.
Well,
but, yeah.
For example, not to talk about the Barbie movie for a minute.
That's okay.
Sidebar.
This is actually an episode about patriarchy. We don't have to talk about Barbie the whole time.
Well, I am going to reference a movie, though.
Okay, cool.
I don't think either of you have seen this movie. It just came out, and I love it. It's called Bottoms.
Right.
Oh,
I need to.
It's so good.
It's so fucking hilarious, and it's kind of a similar vibe to the Barbie movie. It's set in a high school, but the high school boys who are normally the kings of the school, you know, the football players and all that, they are presented as bumbling idiots that are not intelligent, only focused on sex, just pathetic humans, basically. And the girls, you know, the point of this movie is that like the queer girls become the heroes of the school and they start this queer fight club, basically.
I can't wait.
They're so over the top ridiculous. Like there's a part right at the beginning of the movie where the principal gets on the intercom and he says something like, will the unattractive, never going to accomplish anything lesbians please report to the principal's office or something. And he's talking about the two main characters and one of the other girls is like, guess that's you guys. And all the women in the audience laughed because it's this exaggerated perception and everyone can fucking laugh at that. Right. You know, it wasn't like everyone in the audience who might be queer identify is like, I take that personally. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like,
I think people in any marginalized community, and let's be clear, we are three white women sitting here and the intersectionality that we could go into with all of this would take days to record.
Oh yeah, weeks, yeah.
I think we have to recognize that none of this stands alone and that, you know, our experience as white women is light years away from the experience of women of color. And we understand that.
Yeah, we're fine. We're just fine.
Yeah, we're doing okay.
We're doing okay.
Here. Yeah, we get that. And even so, I think that anybody in a marginalized community of any kind has had to see themselves represented in ways that they don't like so often that we've gotten used to being able to laugh at it and understand what the joke is, understand that it doesn't necessarily need to be about us in that moment. And I think mm-hmm. that there are a lot of men who've never really been faced with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can totally see the parallel there, Megan. I just wanted to read this quote here because you were talking about, you know, being uncomfortable with the idea and so not being able to take in the point, mm-hmm. Erin. There's a podcast that I've just started listening to after seeing a million snippets online, and I just love them. It's called the Man Enough Podcast. It's typically two men and one woman, and right now one of the men is out on the picket lines with the WGA strike, mm-hmm. and so he's not doing it at the moment. But they did an episode recently called Are You Kenuff? Which I just love so much. So it's just one of the men, Jamie, and the woman, Liz. Their conversation was great. I recommend everyone go check them out. But Liz said, if you are able to sit with discomfort and think about why you're uncomfortable, I think you'll realize that what you're deeply uncomfortable with is inequality and with oppression. Mm. Hopefully that makes you realize I don't want anyone to feel this way, to stand with women and for us to build a real egalitarian society and not build Barbie Land.
Hmm.
Because Barbie Land might have been, quote, perfect before.
For whoever benefits from
right.
it.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Something that Megan just said. And I think that dovetails with that, that stood out to me. There's this whole school of thought that says patriarchy is actually bad for fucking everybody.
It is.
Like, it's not.
It's bad for men, too.
Good for men as a whole, because it upholds certain expectations of how you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to act and how you're supposed to feel and how you're supposed to interact. And yeah. this is where the concept of, like, toxic masculinity comes from, because you're trying to uphold something that is actually
hurting you.
Incredibly harmful to everyone around you, but also to yourself. And, like,
yeah.
Again, I am thinking of my 9-year-old who you both know is a very sensitive 9-year-old boy. That is a representation. I think he very early on felt, not in a 9-year-old's terms, obviously, but like patriarchy is harmful. I don't like how this feels. I don't like how men hurt women. I don't like how it feels to feel like I'm supposed to be a certain way
mm-hmm.
and that it's not okay to be sensitive or cry and want hugs. Like as a 9-year-old, and even earlier than that, but I feel hope that this next generation of humans, whatever that looks like, there's enough that are like, that doesn't feel good mm-hmm. on the receiving end as a woman identified, but also like, it's not good for men. Like that's not good to not have the ability to be emotionally vulnerable and to have meaningful friendships and conversations. And you're so pissed off, but like, what if you just could go fucking hug a friend mm-hmm. and have a chat over a beer that's vulnerable?
Right.
Ben.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly relevant to the conversation because right now it's all over the interwebs. There's a male loneliness epidemic.
Yeah.
That is directly stemming from generations of men not being able to connect with anybody else because connection is
weakness.
Weak. Vulnerability is weak. being open is weak, being sensitive is weak, relying on people.
Like, not having power. You either have power or you don't. And it's like, can we be more nuanced on that?
Well, because I'm me and I do what I do, I found many articles, one of which is called How Did Patriarchy Actually Begin?
Oh, God. I had to read it a couple times. It was very dense.
I have some pull quotes here.
Some pull quotes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was written by Angela Saini for BBC in May of this year. This article was great. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like always, we will link all of this. There will be many, many links in the notes. Some of the things I have written down here. Human ways of organizing ourselves actually don't have many parallels in the animal kingdom. The word patriarchy, meaning rule of the father, reflects how male power has been believed to start in the family with men as heads of their households, passing power from fathers to sons. But across the primate world, this is vanishingly rare. Intergenerational family relationships in primates are consistently organized through mothers, not fathers. And then it talks about how, like you were saying, Aaron, in matrilineal communities, power and influence are shared typically between women and men. And just as a point of note, I guess, when you say matriarchy, the word itself is the opposite of the word patriarchy. Mm-hmm. But in practice, it really means more of a matrilineal society, an egalitarian society. It doesn't mean women are superior and have all the power and treat men badly. It's not how it actually plays out.
Right. So
they were talking about a 9,000-year-old site in a spot that I can't say in modern-day Turkey. All of the archaeological finds that they've made there pointed to little gender difference. And then, Megan, I just wanted to read this for us because this is special. Excavations of this and other sites dating around the same time. You know what I'm going to say.
I know what you're going to read. I thought about it.
Yeah. The last sentence got me for us. Yeah. Around the same time have unearthed an abundance of female figurines. The most famous of these is the seated woman of the place I can't say, Ketulhuyuk. That's probably wrong.
Wow.
It depicts a woman sitting upright, her body deeply indented with age and glorious rolls of fat spilling out around her. Underneath her resting arm.
So far that made you think of me.
No, I said us. Also, generally. I said us. Also, wait for it. Underneath her resting arms appear to be two big cats, possibly leopards, looking straight ahead as though she had tamed them. We love her.
Living her life. The future is bleak, just like the past.
No, she was the shit back then.
She was the shit, yeah.
Yeah. So this is really interesting to me. I'm just going to read through a couple of these bullet points. So thousands of years later, in cities like ancient Athens, entire cultures had developed around misogynistic myths that women were weak, not to be trusted, and best confined to the home. The elites in early agrarian societies needed people to be available to produce a surplus of resources for them and to be available to defend the state, even to give up their lives if needed in times of war. Maintaining population levels put an inevitable pressure on families. Over time, young women were expected to focus on having more and more babies, especially sons who would grow up to fight. Rather than beginning in the family, then, history points instead to patriarchy beginning with those in power in the first states. This is the part that drives it home for me. The lasting psychological damage of the patriarchal state was to make its gendered order appear normal, even natural, in the same way that class and racial oppression have historically been framed as natural by those in power. Mm-hmm. Those social norms became today's gender stereotypes, including the idea that women are universally caring and nurturing, and that men are all naturally violent and suited to war. By deliberately confining people to narrow gender roles, patriarchy disadvantaged not just women, but also many men. Its intention was only ever to serve those at the very top, society's elites.
That's how Aaron feels about
that's
that.
That's right. So, yeah.
That's the section of the article that I read multiple times over.
Uh-huh. It all serves to keep those in power, and line their pockets. The people making the rules make rules that benefit them.
Yeah. So what was interesting about that article, the premise of it was all about, like, well, why did patriarchy even start?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to give a little personal note. My mom used to tell the story, and this was, I think, even at my wedding, or our wedding. Excuse me.
I married another person.
We're in Barbie Land.
Yeah, in Barbie Land.
My wedding.
My wedding to me.
It was very small, too. That's so funny, because it wasn't like a big grand thing. But that the big story was that I was like that kid who always asked why. Mm. And the whole premise of this article was like, but why did patriarchy start? Because the primate lineage did not tell us why. Like, monkeys aren't doing the shit that humans are doing, basically, is the very rudimentary version of it. But my mom always said, like, oh my God, you drove me fucking crazy. She didn't use those words. Those are my words. She didn't swear very much. She was a good Irish Catholic woman from Green Bay. But she was always like, you always asked why. everything was why. And now, of course, I have an 11-year-old daughter who's always asking why. And I was like, oh, Christ.
She is you.
She is not me.
But the article was like, why did this start? Secondary, like, how did it start?
Yeah. There's apparently a school of thought that talks about agriculture as a big impetus for patriarchy because farmers needed to own land. They needed to own property. And so agriculture and capitalism, and therefore the men were out doing the thing, the women needed to run the house or something like that.
Yep.
There seems to be some debate as to whether that is more the case or it has more to do with government and war. I mean, and it could be and both, right? All of the above.
Yep.
Either way, here we are.
But my takeaway, of course, was why was it men? Because the words that I pulled out were like power and fight, producing surplus of resources, passing on wealth and passing on land. And again, it's why, how, but like, then why was it men still who that was the focus? That was who consolidated the power. That was who established the system that said, here's how things are going to work. They're talking about it in terms of elites, which I get it. But at the end of the day, it was really in service of men. So like, again, why, how? Because the monkeys are doing this.
Monkeys don't need money.
Monkeys don't have opposable thumbs. Maybe that's what it is.
Listen, if they were capitalists, you might see a different thing happening.
They trade bananas.
Bananas.
Like, why couldn't it have been women who were like, yes, I want land passed on to me. Yes, I want to pass on my inherited wealth. But at the end of the day, it was still men that benefited from the power elites creating the structure. And I was like, what the fuck?
Well, they might be the ones that stepped up and grabbed the power to then do that.
But you know when you go into like a, I don't know if you remember this, going into the dressing room with your moms when you were little, and you would close the mirrors around you and it was like fucking mirrors and mirrors.
Yep.
And you're like, where's the end? And I was like, when I read that, where's the beginning? Like, where's the beginning and where's the end? And it's an infinity loop and we're all fucked.
Yes.
So anyway, really good takeaway from that. I just really got depressed.
The thing I don't like about what you read, Michelle, which was a while ago now, because but what I was thinking of when you read it was that it flies in the face of what is basically our mantra on this podcast, which is like everything is a spectrum. It's too like round peg goes in round hole, square peg goes in square hole, you know, like it doesn't leave any room for men or women to be more of one thing or the other. It's like very strictly like, this is who you are. And because of your gender, you have all these character traits and you were entitled to this. And here are your roles. The end.
Well, I mean, that's where we're at in this culture, is that those are people's expectations and those are the gender norms, right? It manifests in so many ways. I think about in dating, when there's a really sensitive man, how there are a lot of women who just can't be attracted to that, won't be attracted to that because it's too feminine for them.
Guilty.
Right.
Oh, good Christ.
It's true, but like...
Just being honest.
No, that's fine. We've talked about that ad nauseum on here, but like that's part of the internalized misogyny because those characteristics are thought of as feminine and people don't want to label them as weak, but ultimately that's what they're thought of as. One of the articles on internalized misogyny actually talked about Jackie and Marshall on Love is Blind.
Oh, I missed that one.
This is something we can all talk about, though, because think about the way that Jackie responded.
She did not like,
to Marshall. Yeah. Sorry if you haven't seen this, but basically she was
another
like...
Another spoiler alert, I feel like.
She said she needed him to man up and she wanted him to be aggressive. And like, as someone who's very okay with a man being vulnerable and sensitive and open and all of that, I also would like some manning up in certain ways. And I even hate that phrase, but you know what I mean? Like, take charge sometimes, please.
There are definitely some, I mean, I know you pretty well.
Yeah.
There are definitely some more masculine traits that you are attracted to.
100%.
For sure.
But like, there's way nicer ways to say all the things she said. And she took
she
a lot
a
of flack.
Cunt.
Well, there's that too.
Immature shithead.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Great hair.
She does have great hair.
She's beautiful.
Yeah. But like, I'm watching that show, that season of that fucking show, and I wanted him. I wanted that guy. Like, he was
Marshall?
So, yeah. First of all, he's fucking hot. Secondly,
he's very handsome.
He's way too young for me.
Thirdly, Megan does not have the same take. But
I was like,
nah. He's cute. I would say he's cute.
Okay. Well, I liked him a lot. I thought he looked kind of like Jesse Williams.
Oh, no, no, no. For sure. For sure.
Anyway, but he was sensitive and open and honest about being vulnerable and all, you know, all of the things that, what did we make up a word for vulnerability sexual before? Because like sapiosexual, but for vulnerability.
Oh, yeah.
We need to coin some kind of phrase because that's me.
I do think we had some kind of term of ours.
I'm sure we did, but I don't remember. Right now. Anyway, I saw him as somebody I would want.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, ugh, this pussy, basically.
Right. One of the other many articles that Michelle sent. It was a CNN article, and I don't remember the two writers. But it was 9 out of 10 men and women worldwide hold entrenched gender biases.
Yeah.
But, like, who's the one?
Seriously, how does that other person not?
Where are they?
It's Michelle. She's right here.
No. Oh, God, no.
She just admitted no, right? So, yeah, I was blown away by that stat.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be, but duh.
Yeah. So, I, of course, looked up the Wikipedia for internalized sexism. It says, women who experience internalized misogyny, again, misogyny being the hatred of, contempt for, or prejudice against women or girls, may express it through minimizing the value of women, mistrusting women, and believing gender bias in favor of men. Women, after observing societal beliefs which demean the value and skills of women repeatedly, eventually internalize those misogynistic beliefs and apply them to themselves and other women. And unfortunately, that is primarily learned during adolescence. Mm-hmm. It said that in the U.S. anyway, the ages of 11 to 14 have been identified as the most vulnerable period. And if you think about the media, like we were talking about before, it's so common. The trope is so common to be like making fun of the woman or like commenting on appearance or weight or whatever. Fuck, even tonight, the fucking pizza delivery guy at the door was like, I hope you're hungry. This is a lot of pizza. And I wanted to be like, sir, what if I was going to eat four pizzas and now you fat shamed me?
He was on the top of a stair and you could have kicked him.
I could have.
And he could have fallen backward.
Yeah, and then we would have been in a bury the body situation.
Erin, you still coming over? We need an extra pair of hands.
No good lawyers.
But you think about the language that we use to classify and describe women versus men. Things like bitch, slut, hag, bossy, crazy. They're all used as forms of gender role policing, right? For women who step outside of those gender norms or they're displeasing some way. A man is assertive and a woman is aggressive. But then it says, linguists have actually determined that the majority of insults for men sprout from references to femininity, either from allusions to women themselves or to stereotypically feminine men. Wimp, pussy, motherfucker, bastard, son of a bitch. So many ways we are constantly tearing down women, even in language when you're not even talking about them at all.
The insult comes from insinuating they're like a woman.
Because they're weak.
I was going to say, it comes from a weakness.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And the thing that is wrong with you is akin to being a woman.
Well, and that's where so much homophobia comes from, too.
I did have a note about that whole dialogue, thought stream, around the obsession with control. All the articles that you sent, I kept thinking about how, again, patriarchy is a system that men disproportionately control and benefit from.
Created and benefit from.
Yes. I kept thinking about, again, more marginalized populations. And I'm like, is this where the escalation of anti-trans and anti-LGBTQIA plus language and legislation has come from? Because as uncomfortable and as disorienting as women power is, if fucking Barbie pissed them off,
right?
Oh my Christ, how much more disorienting and how much more, again, uncomfortable it is for them to be like, oh, I can't even put you into a box anymore.
Right.
I'm already annoyed with women's assertion of power so much that I call them a cunt or a bitch.
Bossy.
But now I can't even categorize these other people, these humans. And so I'm going to focus my energy on demonizing them because my structural power is that much more disrupted. It's not just women who are coming for the power.
Right.
It's all these other fucking people who I can't even categorize anymore that make me feel uncomfortable in not just a power sort of way, but in other sorts of ways.
Yeah, it's frying their brains.
It short circuits their brains.
Yeah.
It's a domino effect of like, if women fucking mind blow their critical thinking skills, like, what do I do with trans? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's more people to disrupt their power, I guess is what I'm saying. Like,
good.
They're like, it's not just the 50% of women. There's like other categories that are like in the 60s now. We're in the 60%.
Shit. Well, and the OWGs are a minority now, truly, except not in power. They certainly hold a lot of the power still.
They still do.
Because how many people are in office in some capacity now who were in office in the 70s when women really couldn't have bank accounts without their husband signing for them? There are still people in power who were around then. That's insane. Mm-hmm. I actually looked that up because I was curious.
I was going to look it up.
When were women allowed to open bank accounts, get a credit card, have a mortgage, whatever, on their own? And this is fucking maddening. So in the 60s, they technically won the right to open their own bank account, but still many banks refused to let women do so without a signature from their husband.
Oh, cute.
I know. It wasn't until 1974 when the Equal Credit Opportunity Act was passed that they could then not be discriminated against.
Because the banks were forced to not be dicks. So my husband, he was born in 1974.
Yeah.
It's less than 50 years ago.
That's 49 years ago. 50 years ago, most women, because most banks wouldn't give it, most women could not own a home, get a car loan, get a credit card, have a savings account, none of that.
So and this is going to be hypocritical because we're now in a podcast and it's going to be however long you choose to edit it down to. But I did do some math on the length of the Barbie movie.
Oh, excellent.
It's an hour and 54 minute movie. So the movie itself is 114 minutes.
Okay.
And according to at least one article, maybe two that I read, Ben Shapiro, he represents a lot of the...
Yes.
He went on a 43 minute tirade specifically about the Barbie movie.
Okay.
He was that pissed off about a fucking movie. That blown away by the message that he was hearing. And so, I don't even know if he saw it, actually. Like, that's the thing. Did they even see it? Did they even watch it? But I was just like, you walked away from that experience and still had that much anger.
Mm-hmm.
It was not like he was like, and there were good parts about it, too.
Yeah.
Again, disproportionate amount of power.
That just made me go back to thinking about the Man Enough podcast, the Are You Knuff episode. I really enjoy their conversations. The men on there are genuinely trying to be like, what does that even fucking mean to be man enough? And why can't it mean that I'm open to all levels of human experience? Why can't it mean that I get to have the emotions that I'm fucking having? And they're trying to look really internally and at the world and learn about the things that they haven't seen before, that they haven't known. Mm-hmm. It's really quite good. And the woman on there, Liz, is someone who almost everything she says, I'm like, yeah, that. And then the guys, to be fair, I've really only listened to some recent ones where only one of the two men is present because the other one's on the picket line.
Hmm.
But some of the stuff that he says, I'm finding myself like, okay, I don't agree with that. And I'm sitting with it and I'm trying to hear you. And I'm not just thinking of like, how could I convince you otherwise? But one of the things he said in watching that movie, even someone who's already really looking deeply at masculinity and what that means, he said, no matter where you stand on it, you're talking about patriarchy, you're talking about sexism, you're talking about whether you like it or not, you disagree with it, or you weren't represented in the film and you don't feel like it represented true men necessarily. Even Will Ferrell, who I love, all of those characters were just like, and then Liz kind of interrupts him and says, one tone and superficial. That's what women's characters have been forever. Mm-hmm. And he said, there's a lot of men that are like, I wouldn't have been like that in the boardroom. And she said, but that's how women feel when they watch so many movies. I think the role of Ken wasn't to represent men. It was to show men how women feel when they watch movies.
Mm.
First of all, the fact that you feel entitled to feeling represented in everything you watch is problematic.
Yep. That's just kind of a full circle moment for me because go back to what I was saying before about, yes, I do feel like they were being demeaning to men in Barbie land because they were treating them as if they weren't intelligent enough or capable enough or good enough to hold high level positions or positions where you're making decisions about how things are going to operate. That is demeaning and that is how women are treated.
Yeah.
You know, you're special if you break outside that and, you know, break that glass ceiling or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And you actually get to one of those roles. It's like, ooh, a woman in power. You know, it's still like
special star.
Something that is a novelty in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that resonated with me because I feel like while maybe they weren't necessarily being abusive to the men, they were completely dismissive of them
because neglectful, maybe.
They didn't even consider the possibility that they could be impactful.
She even said, oh, I've never thought about where they live.
Right, like, right.
I don't know.
They're so inconsequential.
Right. That superfluous, she said. Yeah.
Anyway.
That's intentional.
Right.
I never even thought about that. What do you, oh, you're here?
Oh,
that's
me. Oh, you again?
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, you're back.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah. So one thing that I observed when I was watching the movie and that I read through the articles was this flip-flop, right?
Yeah.
As Barbie became more aware, self-aware.
Yeah.
She became more confident. Mm-hmm. She became more competent.
Yeah.
As she did that, Ken got less, right? So it was like this flip-flop of he became almost more fearful.
Yeah.
He got more afraid of what he was learning, whereas she gained more confidence from what she was learning. Mm-hmm. And I think that was reflective of some of the dialogue out there. It was almost like what was happening in the movie of Ken and his buddies who were like becoming more entitled and more fearful of this shift in power was fucking playing out in the podcasts and all the spaces of these right-wing commentators.
You're like, literally making the point.
You are totally mirroring.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't play it any better, bubs.
Yeah.
They were showing the fear of, oh shit, these women are...
Uh-oh, they're on to us.
The message has been broadcast in a way that we've never wanted it to be broadcast. We're mirroring the fear of what that might mean.
Yeah.
And again, it's not about demeaning or discriminating. It's more like the disproportionate amount of power that they have was being lowered, right?
Yes.
Like the more women that become bespoke, that become confident, that become more like, oh, that's interesting, then the balance has shifted a little bit. And so the fact that that was reflected in the podcasts or in the multimedia universe of the people who are...
The response. Yeah.
That was, I was like, oh, you well, totally
they
did
it. Well, that's how ironic it is.
It's stressful for men because they've got to level up, you know, instead of just being powerful because you're entitled to be powerful because you're male. Like, now you've got someone competing with you who's intelligent, articulate, capable, et cetera. You need to level up to that. And you're not just entitled necessarily to the position you're in. Like, if somebody's competing directly with you for a position or something like that, and that is uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, and the big tantrums, I think, are in the hope of stopping getting to the point where they need to level up.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to right now. But if we all know the truth and the secrets, then they will have to. And that'll be hard work.
But going back to the fact that because of the system of patriarchy where men are, it forces or at least enables them to be individuals, right? I am my own man. Mm-hmm. I am powerful. I am smart. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed to be vulnerable with each other. So then they don't collectively gather together and be like, how can we support each other?
Yeah, because they don't get power from each other.
They get power from themselves. And from the system.
Yeah.
But when you think about the Barbies, they gained collective power.
Yeah.
The more that they leaned on each other, the more they were like, oh shit, that's your experience. They took back what they knew was at least feeling more balanced, right? Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, the men are like...
Fighting amongst themselves.
Literally fighting amongst themselves, which I don't think was a misrepresentation of what happens today.
Yeah.
It's so funny how many parallels I see between the Barbie movie and The Handmaid's Tale.
Truly.
Even though one is so much darker than the other, but all of the same things, you know, keeping the women separated and...
Subservient.
Confined and not letting them grow more powerful together. Like, it's very controlled how much time they get to spend together, and that's how they kind of rise up, is by finding a way to like network and work together. And then the men, ultimately, a lot of them end up destroying themselves because they can't play by their own rules because they're so insane, you know?
Well, and they're also entitled that like, yeah, we made those rules, but I'm special, so they don't apply to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What you were saying, Erin, reminded me of the way, like, at the end, when she's really encouraging Ken to figure out who he is on his own. without being defined by his relationship to her
mm-hmm.
or to his profession of beach or to his mojo dojo casa house. You are more than that. You are Ken. What does that mean outside of these other things?
Outside of the patriarchy.
Outside of. But you know what it fucking made me think of? And I went and looked it up because I couldn't remember who it was. That there was a headline on August 7th of 2016, the Chicago Tribune tweeted, "Wife mm-hmm. of a Bears lineman wins bronze medal today in Rio Olympics." Mm-hmm. They got torn apart,
mm-hmm.
rightfully so. And a lot of people were replying with things like, "You spelled three-time Olympian Corey Cogdell-Ermain wins second bronze medal wrong."
Mm-hmm. They defined her through his athletic prowess.
Through her relationship to him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even put her fucking name.
Yeah. Did he win a fucking bronze medal anywhere?
Nope.
No.
Sure didn't.
Yeah.
Why are men allowed to be defined on their own while we are defined in relation to them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, you know. The ways that sports are affected by mm-hmm. patriarchy, they are many. According to the United Nations Educational, Scientific, mm-hmm. and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, they said outside the period of major sporting festivals, like the Olympics, right? Statistics claim that 40% of all sports participants are women, yet women's sports receive only about 4% of sports media coverage.
But did you see 2 weeks ago,
yes!
fucking Coco Gauff's U.S. Open championship had maybe double than the men's final on Sunday?
Fuck yeah.
It was amazing. When you actually fucking broadcast it,
right.
people will fucking watch it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have season tickets to anything other than the Oil Rain women's soccer in Seattle. Watching my 11-year-old daughter watch women play on the same field that the Seahawks play on and that the Sounders play on, she's just like, oh, of course, right? What's fascinating is watching the 9-year-old boy who is obsessed with football.
Yeah.
He is actually more blown away by seeing women play on that field than she is in some ways, which I'm like, that is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to be blown away by the fact that, like, this is a new thing. This is a big thing. Because it's him that needs to come farther along than she does.
Yeah.
That is amazing to me that us just buying season tickets to a U.S. women's professional team soccer game,
mm-hmm.
he is the one who's like standing up cheering in a way that he's absorbing it. That would never have happened in our childhood. That wasn't a thing.
Absolutely not.
I mean, my grandmother would come up to my daughter after her basketball games and softball games and stuff and say, oh, I wish that we could have played sports when I was mm-hmm. your age, you know, like it wasn't even an option for them.
That's unreal.
So right? I can't imagine what it's like for her watching these girls out here playing super hard, being really good and everyone being super excited to watch them. And I mean, how cheated does she have to feel?
And she's still alive.
Right.
This was in her lifetime.
Right.
Right.
And also, we're not there yet quite, but that those women are paid equally mm-hmm. to said men who play on the same field.
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice.
That'd be great. I mean, in the U.S. Open tennis tournament celebrated 50 years of equal pay, of equal prize money.
Oh, wow.
With Billie Jean King standing there giving the trophy and the check to Coco Gauff and saying, here's your $3 million. And the next day, they gave $3 million to Djokovic. They both received the same fucking money. And that's been 50 years.
That's incredible. I did not know that.
So I was struck by the article that you sent that was about the rise of feminism in China as a result of the Barbie movie mm-hmm. and the backlash.
And so it was banned.
Ugh.
Yes. Uh-huh. Don't bury the lead there.
Kind of, again, speaks to the potential message that it sends about the differential power that exists and what it's trying to challenge. But I was struck by something they said. That if a man comes out of the movie and he understands half of the themes and he thinks it's a good movie and an interesting movie, then he's a normal guy with normal values and stable emotions.
Whoa.
Oh, again, the bar is so low.
The bar is on the floor.
Like that you didn't come out angry enough
right.
to want to have a 43-minute tirade on your podcast. But like that you just came out like, I got half. I'm not angry.
Yeah.
Have enough emotion to like not be pissed off, then you're like just baseline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
that was frustrating to me. And we've talked about this, like how even men in our own lives who were like, you are gold standard,
right?
And you come out of it and you're like, I hadn't thought about that before. And I was like, the fuck, you wait, haven't thought about that before? Like,
wait, what?
We live this shit every day.
What do they think about every day, Aaron?
they think about the Roman Empire, apparently.
This has just come across in the last 24 hours. And I'm not even on TikTok, but the trend of asking male identified partner spouses, whatever, boyfriends, hey, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? And it's
so much.
Significant amount of them. Think about it, a significant amount of time.
Yes.
So again, like, the baseline is, oh, if they come out of the Barbie movie not being a raging asshole, yeah. They're a normal guy.
Great.
Because the rest of the time they're thinking about apparently the fucking Roman Empire. I mean, like, the diversity of thought is relatively
discouraging.
I mean, I saw Gladiator. Russell Crowe was in it. Anyway, that struck me that, like, this takeaway from this one was like, oh, they walk away from the movie essentially not being angry and wanting to have a tantrum about it.
Right.
They're normal.
One of my many viewings of the movie was with my friend Neil, who you both know. Aaron, you've known for a long time.
I've met Neil many times. Lovely. Hi, Neil.
You used to both be season ticket holders to Seahawks games in my basement back in the day.
Very pricey ticket.
You had to contribute to the meatball sub fund. That was
so good.
Yeah. He is someone who I've known for decades, literally, and who is very self-aware and someone who is introspective and wants to learn more about himself, the world around him, himself in the world around him. And when we left there and we were talking about it, he was saying, okay, so obviously you're going to nod along to a lot of that I didn't know before, right? But what really stands out to you? I essentially said, when Barbie and Ken first get to Venice Beach on their rollerblades, Ken is like, hey, everybody's looking at me. This is great. Look at that. I feel so much respect. I feel seen. And she's like, I don't know what the word is, but I'm conscious of myself. Everyone's looking at me. And he's saying, and there's no undertone of violence. And she's like, I very much feel an undertone of violence. And that was something that he had not, I mean, he is 6'4", I think. He's a big dude. Right. He's never had to feel that way and recognizes that and was like, okay, I have questions. Let's talk about this. I want to try to understand. And I want to look back at all of the ways that I've existed in the world. And hopefully I haven't contributed to that feeling for anybody. And,
right.
You know, so like when we talk about we know good men, like we really do know some really fucking good men.
Very
good. And they still have these blind spots because how can they not? And so the hope is that instead of just coming out having enjoyed the jokes and not being offended.
Right. The baseline.
The baseline of the normal guy, quote, that you're then questioning some things that you heard and like thinking about ways that you can maybe show up better for the people around you.
What was creepy about that whole storyline, this is going back, 20-year high school reunion was 2017 for me.
Mm-hmm.
I flew home to San Diego, was staying with one of my best friends on the beach, right? Like this amazing spot. Went up to the reunion. Everybody had a great time. We danced the night away, had some drinks.
As you do.
As one does. But it was North County, San Diego, and we were in Mission Beach. And she went home earlier, and so I had to get my own way home and, you know, partnered with some other high school friends who I hadn't seen in forever. But we shared Ubers and went to various parts of San Diego County. So I finally get to the alleyway, and I actually didn't have her address. I just, like, know because I've been there. It's like, okay, it's north of the roller coaster, right? Like, most of fucking Mission Beach is north of the roller coaster. But anyway, he figured it out. He was also Russian. There's this whole weird dialogue in the car. This is way before the war in Ukraine, but like about Putin and Trump. And and I was very drunk. And so I feel like I came out relatively articulate with this gentleman. But it was a very strange dialogue in the car. But he got me to where I needed to be, which was great. So I get out of the car. It's probably like 2 o'clock in the morning. And at that point, I'm like, oh, heels. No, I'm not wearing the heels anymore. And I walked through the alleyway to the boardwalk, Mission Beach boardwalk. I'm like, at least it's lit.
Yeah.
And I'm walking down the boardwalk with the heels in my hand, and I've had some drinks, right? I'm not shameful of that.
No.
But meanwhile, I'm like, it's quiet and it's creepy. It's dark. And I am a mom of two children. And immediately in my head, as I'm walking down that boardwalk at 2 a.m., I'm going through the scenarios of what could fucking happen to me and who would find out and how would they know. Like, there's just so many dark spaces around me. And I'm looking over my shoulder walking down the boardwalk. Got home safely, right? Got to my friend's beach condo and went to bed. But I was like, has my husband or any of my male friends ever thought about like walking on a P.S. boardwalk, bright lights, well lit, but they've never had to look around their surroundings and be like, I look pretty good tonight. I'm in a dress. I'm dolled up.
Yeah.
Who's going to come get me? And I'm 5'2". I'm not tall.
No.
Like, I'm easily tackable. I mean, I'm very feisty.
You are feisty.
I'm how many years old at that point? And I'm like, this is fucked up that I am thinking about whether I'm going to be murdered on a boardwalk at 2 a.m. in my hometown as I'm walking home. I know I have two children. And how are they going to find out whether I'm murdered? Maybe it's all bullshit. But at the same time, the thought was there because it's realistic enough to be worried about it. That I guarantee you the 6'4 guy or even my not 6'4 husband are like, they've never walked through life worried about that concept.
Well, and had that happened, what would the narrative have been? She was drunk. She was wearing a short dress.
To be fair, it was Michelle's dress that she It literally was your dress. So anyway.
But like, how much of that narrative would have been around what you were doing and why weren't you doing a better job of preventing that?
And I was also a mom, so why was I out in the first fucking place?
Oh yeah, why are you out having a life?
Why was I not thinking about the Roman Empire?
I thought you were going to say thinking about my kids.
No. I was thinking about the Roman Empire.
Yeah,
but like, that's bullshit.
Anyway, it's absolute bullshit.
The good ones, even. I don't think that they walk through life.
No, but they can't.
It's not their fault. I'm just saying. Like, that's fascinating.
That's part of the conditioning under this system that has failed everyone. They can't possibly understand because it has bred entitlement and power. And quite frankly, from those violence.
Or either just complacency.
Yeah.
Again, it's not this like binary of like this violence or
no,
like,
no.
But I'm like, not even having to worry about it.
Yeah. Well, there's an ignorance.
Megan, you travel all the time for work. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have a pause or a moment where you're like, this feels unsafe or this is scary? When you're out and about, right, drinking with work colleagues, I'm like, do you think your male colleagues ever have that pause?
I think that my male colleagues that don't identify as hetero, cis, white men do feel that way.
Sure.
And I think that they are worried sometimes about perception and safety and things like that. But I think that the typical cis, white, hetero man probably doesn't. But yes, I think there are men that do have to worry about it.
For sure.
Yeah. Like we said before, like homophobia really does stem from this same place. You know, you're not being man enough and that makes me uncomfortable. And so you're in trouble now.
And this is very much coming from the place of I am a woman walking through the world. I'm not that identity, right? I can't fathom any other identity than my own because this is how I walk through the world. But like how much more scary it would be. Mm-hmm. Especially depending on where you're traveling, right? Where states are actively passing legislation to like be that much more violent or oppressive towards you. Like you literally don't belong here.
Right.
You are criminalized for being here or showing up in a place that would make you feel safe.
Yeah. It makes me think about other cultures where women are, you know, even that much more marginalized, you know, everything about their life is controlled. Mm-hmm. What they wear, where they are.
Who they marry.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if you can call it a life, I guess, you know.
That just reminded me, looking at the other identities, that in this article, 7 not-so-obvious signs of internalized misogyny from Open Democracy a couple years ago, it says, homosexual men have long suffered homophobic abuse because they do not conform to heterosexual male norms, including pursuing women. Homophobia is entirely underpinned and propped up by patriarchy, and our patriarchal society encourages the policing of the boundaries of what it means to be a, quote, real man and behave in a truly, quote, male way. Interestingly, LGBT women who identify as butch or present themselves in a more masculine way are treated with fear and contempt for trying to encroach on traditionally male territory and not conforming to normative ideals of female beauty. This kind of homophobia is very similar to the sexism that heterosexual women face when attempting to carve out a place in a world that is still dominated by men. The look of mainstream androgyny has gravitated towards masculinity. A cursory Google search for the term androgynous will throw up a page filled with images of slender white people with short hair wearing traditionally masculine clothes like suits and braces and trilby hats.
Can we Google this shit? What's happening?
This like, must braces not on be the from teeth? The U.S.
Or like Forrest Gump braces on the legs. What's happening?
Honestly, I think it means suspenders.
Oh.
And I don't know what a trilby hat is. Anyway.
Google.
And then it says, Siri. This ties into the notion that being male is the standard while being female is other. I mean, that's kind of the whole fucking point.
Yeah.
This world is made by and made for men, mm-hmm. and you gals are lucky to be here.
Which, back to the opening part of Barbie.
Yep.
That is, again, the hyperbole mm-hmm. of the opening is like, you're just lucky to be here.
Yeah.
You're not oppressed. You're fine. But you're just lucky to be here. You can come to the party if you want to. Mm-hmm. But like, adorbs that you come, we don't really need you here.
Right.
Like, you're right. An accessory to the story.
Right. Yeah.
And I have a deep, deep crush on Simu.
Oh, yes.
Deep, deep crush.
He's the Ken who can do flips.
He is the real Ken, let's be honest.
I don't know. I thought Ryan Gosling fucking
nailed it, but I loved it.
He was born to play that role. Yes, he was amazing.
He's amazing.
Well, one thing before we get into like the end of the movie, I actually wanted to bring this up earlier and, mm-hmm. and forgot, but here it is in my notes. In the beginning of the movie, in the little montage of how perfectly perfect for women Barbie Land is, one thing that really struck me was when the women were accepting awards, fucking Nobel prizes. None of them said thank you or were like demure in any way. They were like, I worked hard and I deserve this. In what fucking world would that actually happen? If a woman did that here and now in our world, all of the news the next day would be
she's a bitch.
She wasn't even grateful.
She wasn't grateful.
Always be grateful.
Yeah. It does tie back to her monologue.
Right?
That stood out to me.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there the second time I saw it. So my 11-year-old daughter saw it with her friends first. Yeah. Then I saw it with you and your mom and our friends
yes.
and kids. But that part to me stood out as like, oh my gosh, my 11-year-old daughter gets to see instead of age 44.
Yeah.
Oh shit, is that how old we are? God.
Yes. Sorry.
Anyway, she gets to see where a woman, even if it's fictional, even if it's in fucking...
It's being modeled.
It's fake.
Whatever.
But it is being modeled as like, modeled. I earned it and that's it.
Yeah.
I should get this award.
Yeah.
That's just unfathomable. I'm saying it's like unfathomable that we would have grown up in a space where you would be able to say that.
Yeah.
And she's just like, of course.
Fuck yeah.
And I did ask her as a takeaway today. I was like, so she came home from the movie and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I was like, what's going on? What do you think? And I hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So I asked her to go back to that time. And I said, what were your takeaways? And she said, even if you're made to do something, people's expectations of you, whatever they are, you can still do what you want.
Aww.
Oh, shit. Okay, hold on. And then she also said, which I thought was like, fuck, this is brilliant. And they're way smarter than we are.
They really are.
Things change over time. So she learns about the patriarchy and Ken's reaction to the patriarchy. She's like, everybody kind of changes in the process. People change and their reactions change. So like the beginning, the Kens were so upset about the imbalance. Mm-hmm. But then over time, they're like, this is an opportunity. It's unsettling at first. And then let's settle down. And their reactions balanced out. And they were like, whatever. But she also was talking about how playing with the doll is all about imagination. Like you're playing with the doll and you're playing out your imaginations of what you want to be and what you want to do. And that you really want life to be totally perfect and you're playing out these imaginations. But again, that changes. And at the end of the day or the world, whatever it is that Barbie is going through, she realizes it's the best thing to have acknowledged that she learned and that being totally perfect wasn't the thing and that you don't ever have to live up to others' expectations, but that the whole like journey of itself was the goal. Ugh. I was like, that's an 11-year-old saying that. I was like, she walked away from a fucking movie and she was like, don't ever live up to other people's expectations. And that at the end of the day, you know, you don't ever have to owe anybody anything.
Be true to yourself.
Be true to yourself.
And figure out what that means.
Yes.
Who are you?
So that was her takeaway. And I was like, again, I'm summarizing, but I did take notes because I take notes.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they all came to understand that it was best for everyone that everyone be represented and acknowledged. By the way, I learned that when they apologized to Weird Barbie in the end for, like, making fun of her, and she's like, would you like a space in my cabinet? And Kate McKinnon ad-libbed the line, can I please have sanitation? They all just cracked up. I love her so much.
I just want to be friends with her.
I know.
Kate, if you're listening.
Kate, we love you.
Kristen Wiig and Kate.
So many people. Also, I heard that Ryan Gosling ad-libbed when he goes, sublime!
I did. I heard that too.
It's my favorite thing. So the one like problem I really had with the movie, but then as I thought about it, I realized, no, it fits and it's exactly right, unfortunately, is that at the end, she apologizes to him for taking him for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not apologize for anything. He doesn't even acknowledge that he brainwashed her friends and established this patriarchy and stole her house.
And oh, yeah, that was a big deal.
In all of the ways that he just was like, fuck you, I'm in charge now.
Yeah.
Didn't even acknowledge that any of that might have been harmful. And so it's like, oh, so she's still apologizing and taking care and whatever. And he's not. But like, of course. It was maddening.
I didn't even think about that.
My favorite part of that whole scene, though, was when he said, to be honest, I lost interest when I found out the patriarchy wasn't about horses.
Yes. I mean, to circle back to the Roman Empire.
Right?
They were on horses a shit ton of the time from what I know.
You're going to start thinking about it.
God damn it. They've totally inceptioned me.
Oh, shit.
No, I did think of one more thing. Over the years, and I do have a lovely husband. Oh my God, that sounds terrible. I'm not like caveating that. But over the years, I have heard lots of friends always compliment my partner.
Yes, I have been one of them.
And that's fine. Yeah. It's not a bad thing.
No.
But for being kind.
Yeah.
Thoughtful, generous.
A contributing partner.
Contributing partner.
Yeah.
Whether it's 50-50 or 60-40 or 40-60 or whatever the math works out to be.
Well, and every day that's going to change.
And that's going to change in the moment because right now I am 0% and he's 100% at home.
Right.
So that's just fucking life. But I've always been fascinated and it has been broad spectrum. We're like, oh my God, look at him go. He gets a fucking gold medal.
Yeah.
And people comment on it.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, so just to be clear, I grew the shit. I birthed the shit. No medication. Very violent labor in the second time. Oh, stitches, all the things, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And then nursed for a total of almost 2 years. But this is the gold medal. That is adorable.
What?
You made a dinner for other people, yeah, in front of other people. Yeah.
Which he's great at, by the way.
He's very, he's
and
much better.
And I appreciate it very much.
But that is fascinating to me that it's like, why is that called out? Where, yeah, I'm like, why would I expect any less? But that is systemic.
Totally.
That's called out.
You see a mom at a park pushing a stroller and she's looking at her phone. And what you think, the collective you, the old biddies, whatever, is that mom is distracted because she's looking at her phone, mm-hmm, while she pushes that stroller. You see a dad, mm-hmm, at the park pushing a stroller, looking at his phone, and you're like, oh, what a great
job,
daddy,
buddy,
took his kid to the park. Right? And it's such this common trope that's become this joke, but it is so unfortunately true. And some of us have life experience to back those up. You are unfortunately fortunate
that
you don't
bonkers.
Have that experience.
That's bonkers.
The bar is on the floor.
Or that people are like, oh, the dad's babysitting tonight. Oh. I was like, again, that is a systemic thing that has said that it is an exception for men to take care of their children.
Yeah.
Which, if you go back to the fucking roots of patriarchy, it is to propagate your own children to and pass on your wealth and to pass on your property. But then it's a gold star if you actually fucking take care of them. That's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
The system says that you should do that thing. But then if you actually take care of them, you're special.
Right. It's so maddening.
I can't believe we got through this whole thing without talking about America Ferrera's monologue. And I feel like we should talk about it before we close.
Absolutely. It was so fucking powerful and meaningful. And if you hadn't already been in tears and you were someone who was going to cry at some point, this would have done it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Megan.
Yes.
Would you please? Because I literally cannot hear it enough.
Yes, that's established.
Yes. Can you please enlighten us?
Sure. I'll do my best. Okay. It is literally impossible to be a woman. You are so beautiful and so smart, and it kills me that you don't think you're good enough. Like, we always have to be extraordinary, but somehow we're always doing it wrong. You have to be thin, but not too thin. And you can never say you want to be thin. You have to say you want to be healthy, but also you have to be thin. You have to have money, but you can't ask for money because that's crass. You have to be a boss, but you can't be mean. You have to lead, but you can't squash other people's ideas. You're supposed to love being a mother, but don't talk about your kids all the damn time. You have to be a career woman, but also always be looking out for other people. You have to answer for men's bad behavior, which is insane, but if you point that out, you're accused of complaining. You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women because you're supposed to be part of the sisterhood. But always stand out and always be grateful. But never forget that the system is rigged. So find a way to acknowledge that, but also always be grateful. You have to never get old, never be rude, never show off, never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, never get out of line. It's too hard. It's too contradictory, and no one gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault. I'm just so tired of watching myself and every single other woman tie herself into knots so that people will like us. And if all of that is also true for a doll just representing women, then I don't even know.
I could hear a pin drop in the theater. People had been holding their fucking breath. When she finished, there was this collective release of air. I don't think I'd ever felt so seen. Thank you, Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach, for making that happen.
Who's a man?
He's her husband, yeah.
I know. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So this is not just the women folk who are making this happen.
Not at all. It's just incredible to me.
I will say that when I heard that for the first time, I was sobbing.
Yeah.
In the theater, or did you hear it before? Okay.
But I also thought of women who fit into every category or multiple categories.
Yeah.
Including myself and my mom. Mm-hmm.
I don't know a woman for whom at least half of this isn't true. And it's so bonkers to me that we are all experiencing this all the time. We all know we're all experiencing this all the time. Yet it's still a surprise to some people.
And that was the first time that it was said mainstream for however many multi-billions of dollars of revenue in a movie theater that other people had to hear it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I also took away from the whole experience, and the second time I saw it with the 11-year-old daughter and with the husband and the 9-year-old son, and there were a group of 20-something-year-old women behind us. And I did I knew enough to know what to observe.
Uh-huh.
And hearing the 11-year-old daughter cry at the same moments as the 20-plus-year-old young woman behind us. Again, whatever anger that is caused on the other side of things, this is worth it.
Yeah.
Because it resonated with them and they've never heard it, whether they're 11 or 25 or 35 or 44, however fuck old we are. But like, we've never seen that representation in a film.
Right.
And again, we're white women and we're fine. Yeah. But we've never, whether it was Women's Studies 101 or Feminism 101 or Patriarchy 101, it was still in the massive entertainment industry. That has not been reflected. And to see it reflected over generations, absorbing it was powerful. That is different. And if that's a shift, who knows what the fuck it will mean long term. And laws still need to change. And we're in Washington State.
Thank God.
And our sisters in Idaho are not okay.
Right.
And they're not that far away. Hopefully that will wrangle something in the people who it resonated with to be like, the control of women, the disproportionate control of women. And again, it's men making the decisions to control women. Like, that needs to change. So as shitty as it is right now.
Hopefully it lights a fire.
10 to 15 years, the bitches burn shit down.
Well, you gotta hope for progress, right?
The witches are coming.
Good luck, motherfuckers. Oh, wait, are we not supposed to use that term?
I kind of still like it. Is that bad?
Well, maybe we should take it back.
Take it the
maybe
fuck back.
Maybe motherfuckers should be like, you're a fucking badass, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's right.
And especially if you say it in like a Boston accent. Fuck you, motherfucker.
Okay, so we are going to have Erin back on the podcast at some point just to make her do all the accents that we make her do when we sit around the pool, because it's a lot of fun.
Fuck you.
Erin, thank you so fucking much for being here to do this with us. I love you. You are one of my favorite people on the planet. You and your family are one of my favorite families on the planet. And I'm glad you're here. I think this was a really great topic to bring you in on.
Jesus, how am I supposed to follow that?
Yeah, follow that, motherfucker.
Taking the word back.
I agree. You're great.
I hope you had fun.
I did. Now I'm nervous. I'm like
what? You're nervous now? Most people are nervous in the beginning.
She was.
I'm not in charge of editing.
I got you, girl. Worry.
So much more.
There's so much more to say. But you know what? We're going to still have those conversations because that's what we do. And we'll have you back on another time to talk about something else. Something that Megan won't be quite as scared of. Did we do okay?
Scary. It wasn't scary, right?
No, I'm fine.
You look less scared than you were, but you were awfully quiet. I'm not sure you could get in a word in edgewise.
Well,
she's like, you two assholes didn't shut the fuck up.
I was listening and processing and letting you guys
get it out of our system.
Pontificate.
Talk about your passion.
We are passionate.
I mean, to be fair, I'm in your room sitting next to a We Can Do It.
Rosie women, the Riveter.
Rosie the Riveter.
Well, I mean, also, don't forget that my household is three women, and I've been doing that for 14 years. So,
that's right.
You know, I'm doing my part.
Yeah.
Oh, but how many male cats do you have?
Two. It's 50-50.
Only half the cats. Okay.
Okay.
We need to roll. Join us online at ProseccoTheory.com. Let us know what you thought of the Barbie movie, Ben Shapiro. We are at cheers at ProseccoTheory.com and Instagram at ProseccoTheory. We're on TeePublic. We're on Patreon. And please like and review and rate and subscribe and follow and all the things. Tell your friends. We appreciate you all listening. And cheers. Thank you again, Aaron.
Thank you guys for having me.